Hello, everyone. Happy Sabbath. Beautiful day out there. Hard to think we're in the middle of January, the middle of winter. All the sunshine and snow is gone. It's a pretty nice day. Very nice day. So, forgive me if I talk about things that are not so nice, but today I just wanted to talk a little about what's going on with in our society. You know, I think a lot of people are asking themselves that, shaking their head. What is going on with all the crime and violence in society? We just about every day, certainly every week, you look at the news, some tragedy of some sort. And lately it gets to be mass killings. You know, people go in, whether it's a movie theater like in Colorado, and just shoot people indiscriminately, and you wonder what is going on, what's causing this. Or a school, I lose track of so many things that have happened. I know that school in Connecticut, I guess, was one of the latest one. And then we had the thing in Arizona where Congressman was shot, Gabby Gifford, and other people too. Children were even killed there. And we just, you know, you get almost numb to it. You can't comprehend it, what people must feel like to actually experience it. And we just wonder, you know, what's the cause of it? I guess basically you just have to say it's lawlessness, because all these crimes, we've got laws against them, but for whatever reason, they're not obeying the laws. And so I guess we ask, what is causing it? And I just wrote down a few things that I've heard people say, and I think myself is probably has an effect on it, like violent video games. So many young people play these games, and it's just entertainment to shoot people, and it's very gory type stuff. And you wonder, do they just get desensitized by doing that? And of course, you got the movies. Many movies that attract a younger crowd and older ones too is very violent, just all kind of murder and mayhem. And then music, of course. Gangster rap's one I wrote down. I'm sure there's other forms of music that has got bad things too. Kind of glorifies violence and taking drugs and that sort of stuff. And then you've got mood-altering drugs, which is supposed to help people. You know, many people is on drugs like that to actually help them. But some of these people have done these crimes that they found was taking these drugs. And then we've got broken and single-parent families. And you just have to wonder, these children, are they getting the attention they need? Are they being taught the values they need? And we can point to these as, you know, maybe causes of what we see in society. But I think they're kind of symptoms too. And they're not the real cause. And we want something done about it. You know, people want, well, what's the answer? And, of course, our leaders that we elect, I think they're ready to pass more laws. You know, the people that do these crimes are breaking the law. So we'll pass more. We'll probably pass gun control. Will that be effective? Two cities come to mind, Chicago and New York, have got very strict gun control. And probably they've got some of the worst crime records. Some want to ban assault weapons, you know, assault type looking guns. And others say ban the large capacity ammo clips. And maybe these would slow a shooter down a little bit, but I doubt if these are really going to solve the problem. And we kind of think, is it even possible? It almost gets like this is norm, what's happening in our society. We're so used to it, it's like the new norm. And is it even possible to have a society on this earth that's not violent and very dangerous and just completely lawless? Of course, the answer to that is a resounding yes, but it takes a little bit to get there. What if everyone kept the law? What if everybody kept the law? What if we honored God like the first three commandments tell us to do, to love and honor God? Well, if most people were doing that, I think it would be a big improvement. And of course, the fifth commandment is honor your parents. If that was being kept, I think that would have a big improvement. And of course, you got do not murder, do not steal. I'll forget one here. Don't murder, don't steal, don't bear false witness, don't commit adultery, don't covet your neighbor's properties. But, you know, many don't know these laws, or even hear about them or care about them, and the ones that do know has a lot of trouble keeping them. And there's roadblocks to keeping the laws that we should. Even man's laws, if we kept them, it would be a big improvement too. But roadblocks to keeping God's law or human law either is actually our human nature. And kind of wrapped up in the human nature is greed and lustfulness, selfishness. And I got those now. I put equal attitude, and it kind of does equal the attitude. We've all looked at people or heard somebody say, hey, that guy's got an attitude, and it's usually not a good attitude they're talking about. But our human nature seems to be in rebellion against God's law for sure. And unless you have God's Spirit within you, you don't even, maybe don't even battle it like you should. But what is the answer to this? And I think the answer, undoubtedly, is God. God's saving grace, God's ability and power to change human nature and to restore us, restore our soul, restore us to a place where we should be. And with that, let's turn to Ezekiel 36. See what it says about human nature. And today I do have the New King James Version, so it'll probably be easier to follow. Ezekiel 36, verse 24. Of course, this is in the future. God was saying, I will take you from among the nations, gather you out of all the countries, and bring you to your own land. Then I will sprinkle clean water on you, and you shall be clean. I will cleanse you from all your filthiness and from all your idols. And I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit within you. I will take the heart of stone out of your flesh and give you a heart of flesh. To me, that sounds like an attitude adjustment for sure. I will put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes. And, of course, these are not spirits. They're flesh and blood people. And I will cause you to keep my judgments and to do them. And let's turn back to Isaiah chapter 2. Isaiah chapter 2 and verse 2. It shall come to pass in the latter days, some translations say future time, it shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established on top of the mountain. And here, I think most people agree that mountain means government. The throne, government or the throne of God will be established on top of the mountains, and he shall be exalted above the hills. All nations shall flow to it. Many people shall come and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, the house of the God of Jacob. He will teach us his ways, and we shall walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law. And it won't be man's law, it'll be God's law. And the word of the Lord from Jerusalem, he shall judge between the nations and rebuke many people. They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. And I think this very verse is printed on a monument at the United Nations. But it doesn't do much good to say it if you don't have the power to bring it about. But I guess it is good to acknowledge it and try to do it. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. O house of Jacob, come and let us walk in the light of the Lord. So we can see here that we are destined to have a very different society in the earth, in God's kingdom. A society that does respect people, a society of love and safety, prosperity, everything that we long for that we don't have. In closing, let's turn to Isaiah 11. Isaiah 11, verse 6. The wolf shall dwell with the lamb. The leopard shall lie down with the young goat. The calf and the young lion and the fatling together. And a little child shall lead them. The cow and the bear shall graze. The young ones shall lie down together, or their young ones shall lie down together, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox. The nursing child shall play by the cobra's den, and the weaned child shall put his hand in the viper's den. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth will be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. So not only will people be full of God's knowledge and have a spirit and a desire to do what's right, but even the animals and I think even the weather, everything at that time will be in harmony, which we've never known and can't hardly imagine. Thank you.
We prayed about our big meeting in Elkhart, Indiana for the Detroit, Indiana and Chicago church. It went very, very well, and some great suggestions came out of it. One of the things that we mentioned was overcoming the big problems of all the churches. By the way, all churches, at least in the Western world, have declining membership. Attendance is down, especially among people under 45. Obviously, whole families don't come to church like they did during the golden age of worldwide, 50s and 60s and early 70s, families declining. Actually, it's the lowest family creation startup rate, I believe, in the history of America is what we have now. Families are just not starting. People just not getting married, not starting families. Church attendance is down to 18%, 7% in Europe, and some places even lower than that. People are apathetic with regards to God and godly matters. They don't care. We could have a TV show about is Halloween pagan? And most of the public would say, oh, yippee, who cares? Big deal. Isn't that wonderful? That's how things have gotten compared to the way they were 30 or 40 years ago. Truth is declining. As Isaiah says, truth is falling in the streets. There are all kind of media stories where it was all a big lie. The media were too lazy to even check. Too lazy to even check, like the Notre Dame story. And people don't care about the truth, biblical truth or other truth. We're in a materialistic heathen age. And I don't think we'll ever get back. I was listening to Phyllis Schlafly, and She's on the radio, and I listened to her on the way to church, and she was talking about the post-World War II families in America. Actually, that was some of the highest birth rate, you know, they call it the baby boom, and how families were strong back in the 40s and 50s. I don't believe we will ever get there again. And America will never have the industrial might it had then. That's what she was interviewing an author about the period. And that's what they both were saying, and I believe them. We will never see families like that or the industrial might of America. America's being deindustrialized. So if we're going to get the church to grow in these tough times, and it's hard for everybody, all churches, especially if you're not just a fun and game type church, we need a vision that will help us be passionate about the church locally and passionate about the church nationally and internationally. These are hard times for most churches. As I said, most churches aren't doing well, but of course Christ can make the difference. But the thing to remember, as we get closer and closer to the end, this is Satan's age. This is when God will allow Satan to have the greatest influence. You know, he'll bring back Babylon the Great, the false great dictator and false prophet. So as we get closer to the age of more satanic power, the challenge is to keep the church going and to grow the church is going to be a bigger challenge. Let's first just look at our vision that we need. We're going to go to Daniel 11. This is what I call the vision part. We need to see our vision, see our goal, keep reminding ourselves, what is the vision the church should have? Daniel 11:32. You know, Daniel saw these visions, and the spirit world actually tried to keep him from having it. That's the devil realizes it's important, and we're important. By the way, we might look at ourselves and think, boy, we're small, or certainly a lot smaller than we used to be, and you can say that about some of the other church organizations as well. And you would say, well, and the devil's got the whole world to an extent moving in this direction. Why would he care about us? I guarantee you the devil is concerned about us. He sees our potential even though we don't see it. He sees it. He doesn't like any truth being left. Anyway, Daniel 11:32. And such as do wickedly against the covenant shall he corrupt by flatteries. This is in time. But the people that do know their God shall be strong and do exploits. In other words, there are people in the end who will know God and do a great work. And what I think is that, you know, the church has been small before, and then all of a sudden blossom forward with, obviously, through Christ's power and spirit. And sometimes just a few people at a key place at a key point in time can make all the difference in the world. Let's go to Daniel 12:3. And they that shall be wise, those who really understand the truth and keep promoting the gospel, shall shine as the brightness of the firmament. And they that turn many to righteousness. And you don't turn people to righteousness except you convert them to Jesus Christ and their sins are washed away in the blood of Christ. And then they become righteous. In other words, you have a message, the gospel. People get baptized. They get their sins washed away. That's how you turn people to righteousness. As the stars forever and ever. In other words, you know, people say, young man, you want to be a baseball star, you want to be a movie star, or whatever kind of star you want to be. Well, we actually have a chance to be a real star where you will shine. I mean, literally shine. Do you remember when Moses got on the top of the mountain? It was covered with clouds, and God was there, and Moses said, well, I want to see you, God, really see you. So God put him in a cleft of the rock, and with his hand, he got to see the backside of God. He said, you can't really see my face because you'd be burned to a crisp. But he got to see part of God because God shines with a brightness of energy that is probably a form of pure energy that we can't even fully imagine. But just that little exposure of the star-like brightness of God. When Moses came down the mountain, the people were shocked because he shined. Just from being, it lasted probably for several weeks. He had to put a veil over his face and scare little children. Well, we're going to shine, but it'll be a permanent shine. Not as bright as God. We'll be a little star, and God will be a bigger star, but that's the vision. Now, if we can just be faithful for maybe 10 years, we can be a star for all eternity, for 10 billion years. You look at it that way, it's a good trade-off, isn't it? 10 years of being faithful, to be 10 billion years of being well, doing well in God's family, being at the top. 1 John 3:2, the scripture that we often quote, but it's worth looking at the vision that we want to have. 1 John 3:2. And in 1 John 3:2, here's what John writes. Beloved, now are we the sons of God. We're begotten. You know, you got God's Spirit up here somewhere, like a seed. But it does not yet appear what we shall be. But we know that when he shall appear, the second coming of Christ, our bodies will be changed in the twinkling of an eye. Our bodies will be changed, and we will become spirit beings, and we will shine. and we shall be. But we know that when he shall appear, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. In other words, the only way you can really look at Christ face to face is be a spirit being like he is, shine like he does. We'll be able to do that. Now, that's our vision. Now, and that is a tremendous vision. We've got to keep the truth alive during these evil last days of Satan's last great play. I mean, in the end, we win. Obviously, in the end, we win. But for a few years, it will appear more and more that Satan is winning as we ramp up to the end time. So let that vision inspire us. So when new people come in the church, they will feel the vision. They will see it in us. They will hear it. And they'll want to join it. That's what we want to be. Now, for the church to grow, by the way, businesses say this too. This is what businesses would tell their normal sales reps. They'd say, what we have to first do is retention. We have to retain the people we have as much as that's possible. You're going to always lose some, but we at least retain most of them. So they tell the salesman, keep all of our current customers, like this level, and then add new people to it. And that's how you grow. You retain your current people, and you add new people. Kind of the church would be like a shining city on a hill. That's taken from the Bible, even though I know a politician quoted that. And one of the things the church will need to achieve, so when people come, they'll see harmony in the church. If you've got problems or issues, you can write papers, you can talk to me and others privately. We're not against new truth or... But you want to be harmonious because that's what God requires, harmony. When people aren't harmonious, usually God gets rid of them or he lets them get rid of themselves. So it's harmony. Let's go to Philippians because it's the chapter in the Bible where Paul loved this church, even though he wasn't there a long time, and he's encouraging them to be harmonious. Philippians 2:2, and he really says some wonderful things that we all can remember. Philippians 2:2, Philippians, the second chapter, verse 2, fulfill you my joy that you be like-minded, having the same love, being of one accord, one mind. That means you're working together harmoniously, one mind. Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory. Somebody was telling me a lot of they were talking about another church organization, but I understood it. It often happens to many others. A lot of the infighting was because people had big egos, and the big egos, everybody wanted to be a big chief, and anyway, the big egos, and off you go. Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem the other better than themselves. You know, that's hard to do. That's not human nature's normal thing. It's me. There's even music about me. It's all about me. 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 Anyway, well, as we grow into greater spiritual maturity, we should move away from the me, think of the other person and how to make them feel good. Verse 4, let not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. In other words, look on other people's things and see how you can make them feel good, help them. In other words, be unselfish members, a group of unselfish people. That's what we need in God's church, where you pray for other people. By the way, somebody asked a question once. God says pray according to his will. And they said, well, if it's according to God's will, why do you have to pray about it? Can't God just do it without us praying about it? Well, God has a higher motive. His higher motive is developing us, building unselfishness in us. So he's not going to do it until we care about the other person and pray for the other person. You grow more by praying for other people. I mean, pray for yourself too. But so God's higher motive is achieved when we ask God in love to help other people. Then he does it because he wants us to be more unselfish and loving. And that's, human nature, that's a big, big thing. Pray for that kind of selfless church and to help people in the church be that way. What the devil wants is rivalries, you against him or you against her, whatever it is. Verse 13, Philippians 2. For it is God which works in you both to will and to do his good pleasure. So God is working in us, and he wants us to do the right thing. Do all things without murmuring and disputings. In other words, he doesn't want a whole lot of infighting, gossip, and disputing, and, kind of arguing and debating in a negative kind of way. We can have good, deep Bible discussions, but I think you know what I mean by arguing and debating and disputing in a more negative way. That's not what God wants. Now, the devil, he wants more pettiness. Be petty. And there's a lot of that in the world. Verse 19 and 20. I list these two verses as be a Timothy. Verse 19 and 20. Be a Timothy. Verse 19. this Paul is going to send Timothy and then later Silvanus to that church to help them grow because Paul is too tied up to come himself. So he says, but I trust in the Lord Jesus to send Timotheus shortly unto you, that I also may be of good comfort when I know your state. For I have no man like-minded who will naturally care for your state. It was Paul is saying, of all the evangelists that work for me, Timothy is the best. I know he will care for you. He won't take advantage of you. And so we should try to be Timothy's. That's why God put it in there. Now, this performer was going to walk Niagara Falls on this little cable with a little balance beam. And they had an agent. His agent said, you can do it. Of course, they got publicity and money, and it was taped and all that and televised. And he walked it and walked back. The agent said, you can do more. Do it on a bicycle. So he did it on a bicycle. He came back. His agent said, you can do more. Next time, do it on a wheelbarrow. He did it on a wheelbarrow. Next time, put a 50-pound sack of cement. You can do more, walk it. He came back. Agent said, we can do even something never done. Put 200 pounds of cement in the wheelbarrow and walk it across. And the performer said to his agent, we're making money. You're sure I can do it? Oh, yeah, you can do it. The performer said, well, you weigh about 200 pounds. You get in the wheelbarrow. Needless to say, the agent said, Well, I tell that story to make a point. The success of the church is not up to the leadership. I mean, they have a role to play. The success of the church is all of us. We're all in it together, everybody. Every church needs people with different gifts. And that's what Paul said. I actually said it in three different places in the New Testament. We'll just refer to one here, 1 Corinthians 12. But he says it in three different places. All kinds of gifts are needed. And I believe there's a gift called the peacemaker. I remember when I was in high school, and so many years ago, I'm older than I look. Since many, many years ago, we used to ride the bus to high school. And there was this girl. I think she was Italian. But the details are a bit fuzzy. But when kids got in arguments and fights, she could calm people down. I can't explain how she did it. It just impressed me. You know, high school kids are kind of worried about stuff. Where other people would do the opposite. They would say, I want to see you and him fight. Or you and... Actually, they love to get girls to fight with each other on the bus. Actually, there's some bad high school kids out there even then. But she was the peacemaker. And I would like to think every church needs a peacemaker. Probably of both genders. But women are often good at being peacemakers. Like the one from my high school memory that I think I have it accurately remembered. I'm not even sure how she did it. She just did it. She seemed to have that talent or that gift. So let's go to 1 Corinthians 12. I'm not going to read the whole chapter about all the different gifts. But you can read it at home when you get a chance. Just want to read one little brief section. At the end, after Paul has talked about all those different gifts, and then he says, and even the less spectacular or showy gifts are even more important. He says that too. And then in chapter 12, verse 25, he says, that there should be no schism in the body, but that the members should have the same care one for another. In other words, all those gifts should make us a harmonious group. That's why every group needs a peacemaker. And whether one member suffers, all members suffer with it. Or one member be honored, all the members rejoice with it. In other words, as we pray for each other and care about each other, someone has a problem, you feel for them. If they get a victory, you rejoice with them. That's what we need in God's church. And if we do, I believe when people do come, they will see it and the church will grow. It'll help. It creates an atmosphere of supporting each other. And by the way, it's logical the way things are. God is not going to call the greatest people in God's church. There's plenty of scriptures, 1 Corinthians 1, that says God does not call the great of the mighty. So logically speaking, God's not going to call the most beautiful personalities in the world. I mean, there's some people, you meet them, and they're just so charming and lovable, and they've mastered the art of conversation, and they're just beautiful people. Well, it's easy, you know, to be around them. I would say, isn't it a greater challenge, and one that God will probably throw on our back, to be nice to people who don't have beautiful personalities, who've got their own problems? That's the challenge. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 9 and look at Paul's approach to people. 1 Corinthians 9. Paul's approach to people. Verse 19, 1 Corinthians 9, 19. For though I be free from all men, in other words, he isn't under salary and forced to do anything on that basis, yet have I, you know, on the basis of people who pay him, yet have I made myself servant unto all, and why? That I might gain the more. Unto the Jew I became as a Jew, that I might gain the Jews. Now, obviously, Paul was a Jew, but what he means is he's emphasizing his Jewish background when he's talking to Jewish people and Jewish things that they have in common. To them that are under the law, as under the law, that I might gain them that are under the law. And we've been through this in Romans 6 and 1 and 2 and other places. Paul was not against the law. He's not saying, I fake it. You know, it may also be some of the Jewish traditions he's referring to. Or they call their oral law. And all oral laws and traditions are not bad. Some are and some aren't. To them that are without the law, as without the law, being not without the law to God, but under the law to Christ. Paul did spend some of his life in Greece, since he was born in a Gentile city. And at least according to this one commentary, I don't know if they're right, they're speculating. They think he, as well as got rabbinical training to be a rabbi and one of the top high priests, he also went to one of the Greek universities. Whether that's true or not, it's kind of irrelevant. But at least he could quote, we know, Greek poetry. He could talk to the non-Jews about the things they liked. He could find common ground with them. That I might gain them that are without the law. to the weak became I weak, that I might gain the weak. And I was thinking, you know, if somebody comes in here and maybe they're weak to drugs and alcohol and their life is one big disaster, you know, can't all of us identify with weakness? Haven't we all been weak and fearful at least once in our life? You know, if you say, I've always been spiritual giant, I'm always strong, you're probably kidding yourself or deluding yourself. But even the great Apostle Paul said he could identify with the weak, that I might gain the weak. I made all things to all men that I might by all means save some. And we're not saying that he lied to people. I think that'd be taking Paul out of context. This I do for the gospel's sake, that I might be partaker thereof with you. So what Paul is saying is, he emphasizes what he has in common, and he approaches people where they are. Let's just talk about Paul's effectiveness for just a second, so we kind of see it in perspective. Paul says he wasn't a great speaker. He meant in the flowery Greek style. But he was an effective speaker. Literally, and we've seen some of the verses in the book of Acts, people said that Paul turned the world upside down. Why do you think, they might even have some of the other apostles in Jerusalem, but if Paul was there, he couldn't stay too long because he was converting too many people. He was shaking them up too much. They literally had to run him out of town. Paul was effective. There were even some instances where almost the whole town came to hear Paul speak. I mean, whatever you want to say about Paul, he was effective. He is the main one. Even Jewish people in Jewish history write him up. They say he turned a version of their religion into Christianity and Christianized the Roman Empire. But he did. So one thing we got to say for Paul, his methods were effective. So here's some tips. Like when you meet a new person or talk to a stranger, here's some tips on trying to start up a successful conversation and influence new people. Number one, find common ground like Paul did. You must have something in common with them. You got to stretch. Number two, avoid an arrogant, know-it-all attitude. People can kind of sense it. He's looking down on me. He's arrogant. And they will be repelled. So try not to have an arrogant, know-it-all attitude. Number three, make others feel accepted. Even if they have problems, you're not saying their problems are okay, but you accept them and you hope that with the help of Christ they can someday overcome their problems. Number four, be sensitive to their needs. Let's go to Luke 18:9. This is a classic example of the wrong approach. I'm using this as Luke 18:9 as an example of what not to do. It's a perfect example of what not to do, but you know how we human beings are, and all of us have done it. You know, we all have made this mistake. We all do it to some extent without knowing it. We turn people off with a know-it-all, I'm superior to you attitude. Luke 18:9, and when he spake this parable unto certain which trusted in themselves that they were righteous. Like somebody once said, I'm always pious. You know that guy's going to be troubled. I told you that story. The guy told me that. It's actually in this building, and he turned out to be a lot of trouble for God's church. Don't trust in your own human nature. Everybody's human nature is tricky. Never think that you're better, than other people deep, deep down. We all have human nature. Two men went up into the temple to pray, the one a Pharisee, the other a publican. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself. God, thank you that I am not as other men are. Oh, you talk about a deluded attitude. You know, I'm not. Other men are sinners and weak, and I'm pious and religious and godly. And these other men are, well, anyway, you talk about a turn-off attitude. It turns God off, too, which is part of the point that Christ was making. I'm not as other men are, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this publican. You know, he worked for the Roman Empire collecting taxes. How evil can you be? And when you read the whole thing, the one that was humble is the one whose prayer was heard, verse 13 and 14. So the point is, we have to stay humble when we deal with new people, and be better listeners. Be empathic listeners. I will admit, I have a big mouth. I mean, that's just personality. I mean, a trait. So I talk a lot. And I'm going to try to learn to be a better listener, too. And if you have something you want to tell me and I'm rattling off, just wait till I take a breath and jump in there and say what you want to say and remind me that I need to be a better listener, because that's how it is. What can I tell you? But I'm encouraging all of us to be more empathic listeners. A lot of times, people need someone just to listen to their problem. You may not even have to have an answer. Sometimes you might, but let them talk for a while anyway. And we need peacemakers. Now, I'm going to tell you a stupid joke, but it's about a guy who was the opposite of a peacemaker. He was a troublemaker. And that's what we don't want to be. Anyway, it's called Talk About a Bad Day. There I was sitting at a bar staring at my drink, staring at it when a large, big, strong, burly, tough biker sat up next to me and grabbed my drink and threw it down his throat, swigged it down. And then he looked at me and said, "What you gonna do about it?" And a menacing look, like he was looking for trouble. And I burst into tears. The biker said, "Come on, man. I didn't think you'd cry like a baby. Come on, stand up like a man. I want to fight." And you're in there crying. And I said to the biker, "This is the worst day of my life. I'm a complete failure at everything I do. I was late to a staff meeting and my boss fired me. After I got my stuff, went to the parking lot and somebody had stole my car. I called the cab, left my wallet in the cab. I come home, my wife tells me she's leaving me for a better man. So I came to this bar to work up the courage to end it all. And I got this little cyanide capsule, and I put it in my drink, and I shook it up. I can't do anything right." So I didn't drink it fast enough. So anyway, we don't want to be the biker troublemaker. We want to be peacemakers as much as you can. And right now, society is so fractured. People don't agree. You can see it as you watch TV, and especially when we're in the Northeast, which is more big union country. You can kind of see. They see things a lot differently than we do here. Anyway, you can see how fractured America are. I would argue there are very few, if any, really great role models in the movies or on TV now. I guess there are a few, but not that many. And it's hard for churches, all churches, to grow, especially if they have any substance to their teaching. Families, we're in a family-destroying society. You can just sense it. We're in a family-destroying society, or the families never get started. And think about America. And that, by the way, that 18% church attendance was taken 4, 5, 6 years ago. They say the trend is downward. It's probably even lower than that now. And people under 45, I think all the teachings they get in public school, and I even see it in TV shows, that religion is for the, this is what the communists taught, but the American left is teaching it too. Religion is for the weak and the stupid and the superstitious and the sick. We cool young folks, you don't need God in the Bible. They only go to church if it's a lot of fun. You know, there's someone was telling me about this church in Springfield where they have all kinds of music and dancing, and I guess it's Christian rock. There are probably different versions of that too. But beyond something like that, that's about the only way you get them to come in. But I think we need to pray for God's church smarter. And please help us to build the church, to make the church what it can be, like iron sharpens iron. By the way, we got the new feast site. We signed the contract, and it's all in the works. We'll tell you about it later. Like a focus group where they build each other up. Help us in the Bible studies to build each other up. We can all participate. Help and inspire others. And if you help and inspire others, you will be blessed.